Sonic Interventions, a podcast by Intervening Arts.
Hello, and a very warm welcome to the last episode of the fourth season of Sonic Interventions about artistic, curatorial, and activist positionalities from Poland. My name is Adriana Raczkowski. I am a German-Polish graduate student and researcher in cultural and urban studies concerned with notions of the so-called post-Ost and Eastern representation within the arts, music, and the cultural field, among other themes. And today I'm joined by a very special guest, someone who is creating a podcast herself, and that is Patrycja Rozwora, who is the creator and host of the Kitchen Conversations podcast about Eastern European voices from the artistic, activist, and academic field. Hello, Patrycja. I'm very happy we can speak today. How are you doing?
Hello. Hi, Adriana. Thank you so much for inviting me. I'm doing well. I just did some sport before talking to you, so my mind is very sharp, hopefully, refreshed.
Perfect. Yes. So let's jump right in. Can you tell us more about yourself, your work, and the platform of your podcast that you create?
Sure. So I think on good days, I feel as an artist. Sometimes I'm thinking about if I am an artist because I do many other things. But I'm definitely a creative person. As you already said, I run a podcast. I'm also writing about art. I'm hosting different events. I'm also moderating, but everything in the framework of so-called Eastern Europe, or everything that has to do with the post-socialist history. I'm myself from Poland, from Warsaw, so that's also like autobiographical connection here. I'm originally from Warsaw, but currently since 3 years based in Berlin. Mm-hmm. And I guess today we will be speaking mainly about kitchen conversations. So I think, would you like me to?
Yeah, if you want to, like, go for it. Tell us also about your art, your paintings, and the many things that you do, because there's
that you can see.
Yeah,
behind me, but the listeners won't be able to. Yes. Yes, I have a background in visual art, in conceptual art. I studied mm-hmm. in Amsterdam, where I lived 8 years. So with 18, I left Poland, Warsaw. I lived and studied in Amsterdam, and afterwards I moved to Berlin. So that's kind of my journey so far. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm trained as a visual artist, but somehow on the way there, I found more interest in curatorial practices or ways of collaborating with other artists as well in forms of also exchange, conversation, not only making art as such. So that's why I was like thinking, am I an artist in the form of like creating? But I am still creating art in different forms. But I think my main artistic practice is indeed the podcast, mm-hmm. where I speak to different artists, but also activists, researchers about so-called Eastern Europe, about their work. And through the work, I want to kind of discover histories, cultures, politics, all those different countries that share the same history.
Yeah, thank you so much for sharing. I think it's very interesting to hear also where your interest comes from and what you studied and everything that contributes to what Kitchen Conversation is today, of course, which is by now over 50 episodes strong. And on your platform, you're featuring, as you said, already different artists, activists, scholars from Eastern Europe, if that term even applies, right? Like you already said, there is an ambivalence to this term, if it even applies sufficiently to the variety of positionalities of your guests. And I'd love to hear about your process of curation, what topics, practices, artistic practices, but of course not only, are important to you to include on your platform, and how do you approach curating your conversations?
Yeah, actually, the terminology is quite a pickle, and I always, every now and then, change also the description of my mm-hmm. podcast, because somehow new terms arrive and they fit more. And of course, the current political situation also always influences how I want to name mm-hmm. this geographic, but also mainly cultural, historical and political region. So I do speak with artists from, so-called Eastern Europe. That means Eastern Europe plus. So Central Europe, Eastern Europe, but also the Baltic countries, the countries that formed the former Yugoslavia. So the Balkans, but also Central Asia and Caucasus. So way farther than Eastern Europe, but countries that also shared, well, similar history. And that's what I'm interested in the podcast, to also show the diversity, also show the similarities in certain way, but also mainly the differences in how those times that those countries were part of the Soviet Union or were aligned with the Soviet Union went for those countries, and what happened afterwards, after the fall of the Iron Curtain, and how those countries are doing today. Of course, we know that for some, they have current very horrible persecutions. And in terms of my curation, I'm mainly inviting artists whose work I admire. That's like factor number one, whose work I'm more curious about, and I just want to hear more about it. I think to every art, I think artists can add something to it, and words can add something to it. And the work I'm featuring on the podcast is mainly, I would say, political art or engaged or activist art in certain forms. So not purely visual art, so art that also benefits from talking about it and putting it in a certain context, and where the artist somehow is also important to understand the work. So it's kind of connected. I want to, of course, show the diversity, as I said, of those regions. So nationality is important for me, to have people from really all those places. I still didn't manage, of course. And I invited creators from the same countries as well. So it's not that only once a person from a given place can appear. But also ethnic identity is important for me in terms of curation and representation. And that became more important, or I realized that it's important, I guess, after the full-scale invasion and war, Russia's war in Ukraine, to show that also Eastern Europe is not homogeneous, is not only Slavic and white, and to also understand colonial structures, I think it's also important to show the ethnic diversity of that region, speaking, for example, artists from various Central Asian countries or the republics in Russia. Yeah, otherwise I feel it's quite a feminist podcast. I do have a lot of, I think, feminist voices. And that's just happened because I think that's how I choose the artists I'm interested in.
You already hinted a little bit at it, but what was the starting point? How did it come to be?
So, as I told before, studied in Amsterdam, and that's where the podcast was born. During my master's studies, the Sandberg Institute in Amsterdam. Well, I think the main reason was the frustration with the art and academia in Amsterdam. So to speak, Western academia, where I was very much missing the Eastern voices, both like in artistic and academic discourse. I shared those feelings with other students of the Art Academy, and we formed a reading group. It was called Second Thoughts. It was a reading group, but also kind of a support group, a collective where we just met and shared our experiences, showed our works. Somehow the idea or the name also of Kitchen Conversations came, and we kind of empowered each other. And from this kind of energy, the podcast came to be. I was then graduating from the master's study and had to kind of finalize with a graduation work. My second year of the master was already in the pandemic, so everything was online, and somehow podcasts were big or became
more,
right? Because you could do this just from your bedroom, and this is kind of how it started. The first interview was with a participant of the collective as well, Georgian filmmaker Misho Antadze, and he lived close by, so we could, with the restrictions of the pandemic, still meet the two of us and record the first episode. This is how it came to be. So the project was my graduation work, the idea and the first episode, and then I just continued. And now, it, as you said, yeah, more than 50 episodes and more than 3 years I'm doing it already.
Yeah, thank you. I would love to dive deeper into the space that you situate your podcast in. What role does the kitchen as a sphere, but also food, the domestic, play a role in connecting with your guests and the topics that you center? Also, like, maybe complementing around what you already mentioned, the identity topics, nationalities, ethnicities, over food.
So the name is borrowed from a writer, Svetlana Alexievich. Mm-hmm. She was writing a lot about the kitchen conversation. So those space that was the kitchen in the Soviet Union, mm-hmm. that was like this, well, familiar place where all the conversations happened. And apparently the kitchen was the safest place. So no bags were in the kitchen, or people kind of felt free to express their opinions, also political opinions. Mm-hmm. And also people who maybe usually weren't listened to had place to speak for once, those who, for example, worked at home, so women and children. So I thought of a space that's kind of, as I said at the beginning, kind of something else that the Western academia, so not a place where you kind of speak with big words and with terms and stuff. That's not everyone who is educated in that direction can understand, but kind of a place that is a different forms of knowledge production. Mm-hmm. And also the kitchen as kind of, yeah, the feminist place or the place of different generations where you also speak while doing other things, for example, cooking. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's also, of course, this kitchen tables and kitchen cloths as kind of the visual to the kind of familiar, as you probably also know.
Of course. The poetics of a laced kitchen tablecloth is very central, I think, especially to, I mean, not only the Polish experience, but I think this is a common Eastern memory, of course.
Exactly. And then the food part was actually in my idea of the podcast from the beginning. Mm-hmm. And I'm super happy that it was there and I kept it. So the idea was that although we speak about art and often also politics and difficult conversations, often personal conversations that often also speak about certain traumas. Mm-hmm. So the episodes are not always light, I would say. Absolutely. But that depends, of course, of the artists and what they do. But somehow I always stick to the format that the podcast is finalized by speaking about food. Mm. And in that way, to finalize on a kind of lighter note, but also to get a smile on the guest's face, because I think mm-hmm. once you hear about food, everyone is kind of already thinking about good taste and often getting hungry. Plus, to share what actually is, yeah, similar to our cuisines and what is different. And sometimes mm-hmm. I'm like, oh yeah, we have that also in Poland, I know this. And sometimes I'm like, wow, I really didn't know about this dish. Guests are sometimes very surprised that I'm asking about it, but then people, of course, don't have to be prepared for the question because everyone knows what's their favorite food from home.
By heart, yes. Also, tell me about, you published a cookbook collecting and archiving also the different recipes that your guests shared, right? Like, which is also an art book. How did that idea came to be?
Yeah, that actually exactly came from what I just told you, that I gathered so many of those recipes mm-hmm. that I thought would be nice to also have something physical out of them, since yeah, podcast is, as you know, is amazing to do, but it's kind of in the cloud. So it's like mm-hmm. you cannot touch it. And I come from visual arts where I did create, or I am still creating in certain forms, like physical objects. So I thought it would be nice to kind of take a part of the podcast and put it in the like physical world. That's how the cookbook came to be. I collected the recipes of this first 17 guests that I spoke with mm-hmm. from all different countries, and I put them into an art book. So I did illustrations for it. I also invited two photographers and one artist illustrator to add some artworks to the book as well. Mm-hmm. And additionally, there is archival part, as you said, recipes from my own grandmother, Alicia, mm-hmm. who was actually most of her life in the kitchen. She cooked a lot, and my memories are always from her, like being in the kitchen. And then once the family arrives, she kind of was still in the kitchen. And when we sat at the table, she sat with us, but she never ate. She always had like the empty plate in front of her, and she kind of observed us while we ate and asked us if we like it. But she said she's never hungry because she always kind of smelled all the things in the kitchen, which I'm also describing in the cookbook. So yeah, it's a collection of, let's say, traditional but contemporary recipes from the artists. And in the heart of the book is a collection of my own grandmother recipes, most of them written by hand. So that's kind of special.
Yeah, that's definitely something very interesting, which I think also connects to another topic that you sometimes talk about with your guests in connection also to the East, quote unquote, which is home. The topic of home, food, the kitchen is also a topic of identity. And how does your practice as a podcaster having this make you connect to home?
Yeah, that's a good question. And I think I probably started being interested in the topic because I wanted to connect back mm-hmm. to Poland, to where I'm from. But interestingly enough, I did a couple of artworks connected to memory and heritage that were really speaking about Polish history only mm-hmm. and my own family. And then I also found myself kind of being in this bubble of being like the Polish artist who lives abroad. Mm. And I thought I want to be a bit somehow more than that, in a way that I don't really feel that, and I don't want to represent that and stand for that and be kind of a spokesperson for mm-hmm. those communities. Because I'm so, now more than 10 years away, and I feel somehow in between anyway, as you, I think, as well, as we spoke once. So I thought would be actually interesting to get into those feelings of the East and what kind of somehow makes me feel different to artists or people I met, for example, in Amsterdam or here in Germany, but not fully focus on this Polishness only. Mm-hmm. So this is, I think, how I also started, kind of broadening the spectrum of the podcast, and also to learn about each other's histories. Because I feel we know sometimes way more about the American history, the US, North American history, mm-hmm. or like the UK's history, or even German history, than like Ukrainian or Belarusian or Romanian or Moldovan history, being Polish. So I thought it would be nice to also make a platform where I can, for myself also, find out about all those places through those people, amazing people who create great stuff.
Yeah, I think it's very powerful. And exactly that's what your podcast does. And you already mentioned at the beginning how you curate is also something that is a personal connection, how things resonate with you. And the last time we spoke, I also told you how much I loved your series about your grandmother or grandmother's tales, which I think is such a, family tie connection. Being a person that is not in Poland, I mean, of course, I wasn't even born in Poland, but the connection to my family is very strong. And I think reflecting on that in that piece, how you talk with your grandmother, who is telling about what she witnessed of Polish history, right, in time and place. You spoke with her after her 100th birthday, by the way, which is, I think, an amazing, I was in awe hearing her speak about her life. And you showed that podcast, or you could hear those episodes on the last year on the Grandmother Film Festival on the third edition organized by artist Sofia Tabatadze. Can you tell us more about how the importance of speaking to your grandmother, sort of archiving her memories, and how that was for you as an experience on the podcast as well?
As I was saying, I invite artists or somehow people who create And then suddenly there's my grandma there.
Yes.
And of course she's there because she's my grandma and she can. But I thought I had already this practice of conversating and recording. Mm-hmm. And then the last stage of her life, we saw each other more often. I thought I have to record those conversations, what we are having. So she passed away. She was almost 102. Mm. So still, we had quite some time after doing the podcast, but she lived in Warsaw in like an elderly home. And whenever I went to Poland, I visited her and we had this great talks. And then at some point I brought my recorder and I told her I want to ask her more specific questions and it's going to be recorded. She didn't really understand what a podcast is. And she also wasn't super sure if she wants her voice to be heard in like a public, but then she agreed to it.
Yes.
But it was very special to talk to her. We speak in Polish and the recording is in Polish. You can hear it in the background. And then I did a narration on top of it so people can also understand it. I still get a lot of compliments on that mini series. So it's 3 short episodes that you can listen on the Kitchen Conversations platform, but it's like a kind of separate, let's say, yes, project. Yeah, it was very touching to listen to her. The old people, sometimes they don't want to think about the past, especially if it was traumatic. And I think she also never really spoke about certain things during the whole time we knew each other until this moment when I was more specifically asking about her family when she was a small girl and then also the war. Yeah, I think these are even the only episodes when I give like a trigger warning at the beginning. And it sounds almost like, yeah, it's just the grandma talking, but actually the things she tells are so brutal and interestingly or crazily enough. Now, I did it, yeah, a couple of 2 years ago, I think. I listened back to it recently, and now with the war going on and everything, they become so current, those conversations, yes, and it's really crazy.
Yeah, thank you so much for expanding on that a little bit. Of course, you can find the links to all of that in the show notes for everybody that's interested in hearing Patrycja's grandmother talk about these things. I wanted to ask you still about a more general question, maybe about podcasting or the practice of podcasting, also as a medium itself, and the way you curate. How would you connect this practice to the term intervention, even in the sonic sense?
Yeah, I was thinking about this question, and probably the first that came in mind is a certain like educational intervention. So I'm really hoping to bring a certain form of knowledge. I mean, education is like a very big word, but certain ways that people can get interested in this so-called Eastern Europe and through this easygoing conversations understand the complexity of these different countries and why certain things are happening also politically. Tendencies to the right, for example, why is that? Or strong influence of the church, why is that? Those things are very different, or like because of history, turned out quite different in Western countries. So I think I'm hoping that this is a form of intervention that people who are curious about reading the news and seeing what's happening in Georgia through my podcast, they might get a bit of a feeling why that is.
And what kind of challenges do you face in your practice as a podcaster? I mean, it's a very popular medium, but also it's something that most of the people consume either for free or as part of like a general subscription to one of the like the biggest names platforms, of course. So I also mean like challenges in a sense of material challenge. How do you navigate that in your curation?
Yeah, in your draft, you actually gave some examples of what the challenges could be. And you wrote down a good point that I wanted to say before the monetizing thing, which is language. Because I speak in my podcast in English.
Yes.
Sometimes I'm also insecure how good my English is. And I'm always finding myself, doubting because I speak in 3 languages almost at the same time, Polish, German, and English. So choosing English as my kind of artistic language and podcast language, but still I'm not a native speaker. So that's always like a challenge for myself. But also in terms of choosing guests, I always have to look who actually speaks English. And yes, sometimes the guest might be amazing, but they just are not comfortable with English or speaking about their work in English. And because I do not have money to provide, for example, a translator or dubbing and so on, and it would be way too much work for me, just by myself doing the whole thing, I do have to choose English. And I often meet my guests before to also do like this pre-meeting and pre-talk to see how comfortable they are in English. And sometimes it's a bit like frustrating because I feel there's so many great people in all those countries that speak all different languages, but there's only this three that I can offer. And
absolutely,
the first idea of the podcast was to kind of communicate about Eastern Europe to the Western audience. And that's why I chose English. And I think it will remain so, but there's of course some challenges in that. And yeah, the obvious challenge, of course, is, as you said, so many podcasts and finding your audience, I guess, because my project is very, very niche. I think that's also a benefit. But to find those people, it's always challenging. But I think the more you produce and the more you are there in this world, you start understanding it. It's a common knowledge or perhaps for those who do podcasts, for those who don't, maybe not. But like if you upload your podcast on different streamers, you do not get money for it. And like with music, so music actually does get money for every stream. Podcasts do not. So there is different ways you can make money with your podcast. But if you're a small niche podcast, the advertisement and the sponsoring is not there for you. So yeah, that's always, I guess, a challenge, because I would love to be able also to pay my guests for taking the time to be on the platform. And I would also love to get paid for producing content for people and bringing it out there. But I think those are always the questions. How do you navigate that? And if you do have certain sponsorship or kind of big patron, you might have to change your curation or perhaps be influenced by an organization that supports you in terms of topics and guests you invite. And I do want to have like freedom in that. Kind of if I'm by myself, I know that I can just do kind of what I want in a way I want it and speak about topics that are important to me. And yeah, so that's always both sides of it.
Yeah, thank you. I just wondering, expanding maybe on the topic of a representation of the East to a Western audience, also from your perspective as an Eastern creative based in Germany, in your case, now we see, of course, more and more installments, you know, that also popped up with the big outburst of Russia's war in Ukraine, which is like Art Attracts East and popular mediums giving space to Eastern artistic positionalities and talking even about that region, which is, of course, as we already stated, there's multiple regions involved that are still like completely underrepresented, completely omitted by so many discourses. How do you reflect upon that, being someone who is exactly dealing with that or doing that as a practice?
Well, first of all, I think it's great. I think the more there is, the better for us, for those who are interested to actually sharing about the region and the complexities of it. And yeah, sadly enough, something horrible had to happen that the world kind of understood we are close and everything matters. It's not just a small countries that are kind of behind and just always want to become Western. And I think it's good, and I feel more and more happening. That was also one of the reasons I moved to Berlin, because in Berlin particularly, or this part of Germany, so like former East Germany, I think there's so much happening. Also, a lot of great artists who speak about those topics live here, and I definitely connected to those people here. Depending what platforms are speaking about those topics and who is kind of writing the script for it.
Absolutely.
And sometimes the narratives are simplified or put a bit black and white or explained through like a Western kind of lens. So not really showing
the nuances.
The nuances, exactly. But I think because there's also such a movement of people, now I'm speaking about Berlin and Germany, but of course, so many, for example, Ukrainians came and so many people from Belarus, those people live now here and also make great things. Mm-hmm. I see kind of merging of those groups of people. So let's say Germans who were interested in Eastern Europe now are inviting actually those people who are from those countries to give them voice to kind of speak about those nuances, mm-hmm. because they're also interested now that there's this proximity that we can have this exchange. So I feel this as a big benefit of this kind of exchange of people and knowledge. It's going in the right direction. I hope we will learn from the current geopolitical situation also and understand that what happened also in Ukraine and in Belarus is not like a one country thing, but it's a whole systemic political historical thing. And I hope, yeah, Western countries will kind of open a bit their eyes.
Yeah, thank you, Patricia, for these reflections upon all of these themes and topics. We are already at the end of this episode, or we're heading towards the end of this episode. But before we say goodbye, we will now hear a sample of Patricia's podcast, especially the before mentioned Grandmother's Tales, where she interviews her grandmother, Marianna, which were also part of the third edition of the Grandmother Festival in Berlin.
We were happy that Poland was free, that Poland was finally free. But the truth was that Poland wasn't free at all. So, you know, during the war, there was an underground organization, right? Armia Krajowa, Home Army. And later they all, some clever ones, prudently left the country and never came back. However, most of them returned to Poland because a Pole is always drawn to their country. So once they returned, the party locked them up and destroyed them. So they had to pay with their lives for fighting for the freedom of their country. And for that, they got destroyed. The government, right? The Communist Party of Poland. Yes. And they were all Polish. You know, there were a lot of Poles who actually joined the communists. But a lot of people had no choice. They worked in offices everywhere. People had to work somewhere. Those remained neutral. But it was also, you always had to keep your mouth shut. There was no freedom. You couldn't say what you wanted. You had to be careful who you speak to. This was not freedom. And it lasted 45 years. Imagine. It's almost half of my life.
So thank you so much, Patricia, for this inspiring conversation. It was great to talk to you.
Thank you so much. It was the first time that I'm a guest on a podcast. So thank you so much for giving me the opportunity to speak for all these minutes about my own work.
Thank you. And also thanks to all the listeners. You can find the link to Patricia's work and the Kitchen Conversation podcast in the show notes. And that's a wrap for this fourth season of Sonic Interventions on Polish Contemporalities. Thank you to Dr. Laila Zami and the project team of BO5 at the Collaborative Research Center for letting me guest host and curate this season, as well as Petra Wodke for inviting me to do so on behalf of Intervening Arts initiative to foster student research initiatives and perspectives. Also, thank you to Stephanie Gregor and the team at Euphonica Productions for producing this episode and the podcast. Thank you and goodbye.
Sonic Interventions. A podcast by Intervening Arts.